The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who is quite bothered that Scooter Libby never asked him to lunch, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike.
How are you, Rick? Do you like those build-ups every week?
I do.
Do you look forward to that?
Those are crafty.
Yeah, those are nice.
They are clever.
So, Rick, over the weekend, you had a big birthday.
Oof.
Number 39.
Oof.
And this is for real. This is not a made-up 39.
No.
This is actually 39.
It really is, man. And yet, I still have some remnants of my youthful good looks.
It's true.
I tell folks.
How does it feel to be kind of looking over the precipice?
Listen, youngster.
I know I just made a lot of our listeners out there very
happy. I am oblivious to such things.
Yeah. I mean, you still play your Game Boy, right?
Xbox, baby. Game Boy.
Xbox. Yeah.
But we were up in Boston. I had a friend who actually did turn 40 on the same day. We have the same birthday year apart.
Yeah.
And he's a particularly mellow guy about such things. It's a good role model. It's good to have role models.
Very good. Very good. Well, listeners, let us know who your role model is. Send us a letter at letters@excellence.net. We're going to get going with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have a transcendent interview about yoga in the schools. And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will tickle our funny bones with some education news of the weird. With another word I can't pronounce. Liam, how do you say it? Help us out.
It's gargalesis, I believe. And it's one of two types of tickling. This is the type of tickling that's that you cannot do to yourself.
Interesting. They have a word for that.
Yeah, the other one is kinesmesis, I think.
Gargalesis.
Kinesmesis is when you're tickling yourself?
Well, kinesmesis is like if a bug is crawling on your skin, you have this irritable sensation or irritated sensation.
Right.
And you can do that to yourself, but gargalesis is when somebody attacks you really and tickles you and you start laughing and writhing.
Yeah.
But you can't do that to yourself.
Oh, which is, you know what? This podcast is not just about education, it's educational. Mm. You know, and we should, which maybe will help us compete with some other educational podcasts. Did you hear that there's this history teacher who does a podcast about Byzantine history? And he has, what is it? Something like, Jen, what was it? 150,000 listeners?
I think it's about there, yeah.
Maybe even more. So, I don't want to say how many listeners we have in this podcast.
Are we about there yet?
We're a little bit south of that number. But I think with Liam's word of the week, I think we're on our way.
It's an SAT preparation tool.
Very good. Okay, let's play Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate three topics for 90 seconds each. Jen, get us started.
All right, topic one. The recently released Fordham report, Whole Language Hijinks, details how whole language reading instruction, proven to be ineffective, is making a comeback, but in disguise. It's hiding behind other names like balanced literacy, which trick districts and parents. Mike, do we need a government agency that tells us once and for all which methods of reading instruction are scientifically based and which aren't?
Well, you know what? Maybe we should. I mean, I think in some ways we need an FDA for education, because right now what we have... Liam, did you have something to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, on yesterday's front page of the New York Times, I believe there was a large article talking about how the FDA is very ineffective.
Okay. All right. So maybe the FDA is not the perfect analogy. We have the worst of both worlds right now, though, where you've got the federal government through Reading First dictating the kinds of reading instruction local school districts are supposed to use, but it doesn't have any of the transparency and the vetting power of the FDA. On the other hand, you still have lots and lots of school districts picking dumb reading programs, even though they have all kinds of incentives to improve reading instruction. Rick, I don't know what we're supposed to do.
It's complicated. I mean, I think we've got the worst of all worlds. Having an informal network of three university-based centers trying to, with the lack of staffing, make these judgments about big files.
You mean in terms of Reading First?
In terms of Reading First, making judgments about, you know, what scientifically effective is. Probably nobody's idea of a particularly effective vetting system. And then having political appointees decide how to put this stuff into effect creates all kinds of concerns about the appearances of problem.
All right. But Rick, you're Mr. Incentives. I mean, you would argue that, look, if we have the right accountability system, school leaders have incentives to pick good reading programs, and so we don't have to worry about it. And yet, maybe incentives aren't the problem. Maybe it's about ideology.
That's about right. So one argument is that the incentives aren't in place. And a second is that, you know, which I don't believe, but it's a possibility that folks in, you know, some folks in schools are so committed to what they think will work that the evidence and the incentives just don't sway them.
could also argue that some of your best friends, Joel Klein, Alan Burson, keep, you know, they, in their roles. They've made bad curricular decisions, Rick.
So it's been said.
So it has been said. Okay, Jen, topic number two.
All right. Ed Sector's got a new report out about extended learning time, and New York Governor Eliot Spitzer has said it will play a large part in his statewide reform plan. Why is this topic getting such play, and does it deserve the publicity?
Well, I mean, I haven't read the Ed Sector report, reports on learning time. I got to say, don't make my must-read list usually. But I did not know that Spitzer had been touting it. That is big news.
Yeah, I don't think he actually touted the report, just the idea of extended learning.
So the it here doesn't refer to the Ed Sector report?
That's right. We are unclear about whether Governor Spitzer has read the Ed Sector report.
Oh, they're going to be crushed over there.
Yeah.
That was kind of a tease.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. But Rick, what's the deal with this topic? I mean, there's been six DC events on extended learning time recently. There's several bills up in Congress to extend learning time. Why is this all the rage?
It's the new class size, I think. It sounds nice. There's no downside with it. You can only imagine it helped me. You're just putting in more of an ingredient into learning. If it were costless, I don't think there'd be any downside. I suspect more learning time at good schools is a good thing. And more learning time at bad schools is probably roughly a neutral thing. Problem is, it's real expensive. It always comes with a lot of extra money for compensation for the school day. And I have a strong suspicion that we're going to look back in 8 or 10 years, and it's going to look a lot like the class size reduction efforts looked.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, extended learning time, I mean, if you're a Chicago and you only have a 6-hour school day right now, and you move to a 7-hour school day like New York City, does that mean you have extended learning time?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, the fact is that obviously in a place like KIPP, extended learning time makes a huge difference. It works. But, you know, just taking your run-of-the-mill New York State school and pumping in an extra 45 minutes a day, we'll see if it makes a difference.
Okay. Topic three, Jen.
All right. Some schools that showed Al Gore's docudrama An Inconvenient Truth are catching heat from parents who complain that the film is politicized. Rick, can we allow Al Gore into our nation's classrooms?
Sure. In fact, wasn't his picture up in schools for like 8 years when he was VP? He's a good-looking man. And I like the movie.
That's a good point. Do schools usually put up pictures of the president and the vice president?
I think so, don't they? Yeah.
I think our gallery is saying maybe not.
I guess it depends on the state.
In the Department of Education, we'd walk in, of course, the president and vice president.
Courthouses, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, the big debate here is whether or not An Inconvenient Truth is really an unbiased look at the scientific evidence or whether it's propaganda. Mm. And so there's some parents all upset that it's only giving one side of the point of view. And so they want the other side presented as well.
And what would the other side here being?
Well, actually, in the article in the Washington Post, a teacher found an article from 30 years ago about global cooling that she's decided to present to her children. Well, you know, I think that most people would agree there's a scientific consensus that global climate change is real and that humans are partly to blame. But I don't think there's a consensus around whether or not any of the various policy prescriptions would do anything to fix it. And so you could present that in science class in terms of some of the scientific debate about whether or not cutting down on carbon emissions would actually change the outcome and that sort of thing. Well,
in fact,
responsible.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, one of the criticisms of the movie was that Gore was actually waved his hands a lot at the policy implications on the back end. You know, I mean, I'm quite sure that the ExxonMobil's got a, video clip out there that somebody can show and make sure they represent the alternative.
Good. Very serious today, Rick, aren't we?
We're locking in, baby.
We're locking it in. That's right. Thank you, Jen. You know, Jen's feeling a little under the weather today, and yet here she is still on the podcast doing her part.
I think that's why we're serious. I think she's bringing us down.
Well,
I eat, sleep, and breathe Fordham and the podcast every week.
And I think Rick just blamed you, the sick person. You can't blame Jen for, you know, you not having anything funny to say or, you know, any brilliant insight.
I guess you'd make a good point.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe are you just feeling down about your birthday, Rick? Maybe that's it. Okay, well, it is now time for an interview. Very special one this week. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Leah Kalish. She's the program director at Yoga Ed, which works with children throughout the country doing yoga programs in the schools. It has come under some controversy lately, and we're going to talk about that. Leah, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show, and namaste.
Thank you. Actually, it's interesting that you use a Sanskrit word right off the bat, because I feel like I should just clarify the controversy, which, as far as Yoga Ed's concerned, really isn't a controversy.
Okay, good. Tell us about it.
Yoga Ed is committed to taking the universal benefits of the system and science of yoga and creating programs and trainings that make those benefits accessible to the school system, mm-hmm. as well as to anyone. And just to clarify any controversy about religion, you know, yoga is not a religion.
Right.
You can go to the Hindu leaders and they will tell you that yoga is not one of their religious practices, nor does yoga ask for any, you know, belief from anyone.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not that you have to, like, agree with or
absolutely
belong to or do yoga.
That's right. You know, and I practice some yoga, and my wife practices a lot and is actually a yoga teacher also. And certainly there's all kinds of styles of yoga. Sometimes there's some meditation that goes along with it, but it's generally not what anybody would consider religious. What do you think it was then that sparked some of this controversy? My understanding is that some parents have complained that it's basically a form of religious indoctrination, which, you know.
Well, the Sanskrit of it, the original language that yoga was created in was Sanskrit.
Right.
Which is an ancient language from an ancient culture in which spirituality was completely integrated into their thinking and their culture. So if you use Sanskrit when you do yoga, mm-hmm. and you actually translate those words in the way that, you know, the people who speak Sanskrit would translate them using English, it sounds really spiritual. Because
right.
that was a reflection of their culture. So we don't use Sanskrit in Yoga Ed. I mean, it's for American-speaking teachers and parents and children, et cetera. So
right.
we just avoid the confusion.
So
like not having a Sanskrit, even though
right.
when you're saying namaste to me, it's just an acknowledgement
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we're both human beings and thank you for being here. Right. It's like in, you know, where they say prego in Italian.
Right. Right. But some parents hear that and they associate that with Hinduism. Or,
yes.
And so they
exactly.
think that's religion.
And yeah. that's where the collapse is. And, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to sort of make that distinction for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no more confusion.
So you take some of the poses that have these Sanskrit names or these breathing techniques, and you give them, you know, English names that kids can latch onto. So I remember from a story I saw about this, for example, there's something that you teach called, I think it's called bunny breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is that? So the kids do bunny breathing.
Bunny
what
breath is just a really cleansing breath that is three quick sniffs up in your nose, like, you know, like a little bunny wiggling their nose, sniffing to see, right, what's around them, and then a longer sort of exhale out the nose. And actually, for children, it's a very cleansing breath that also helps them connect to a deeper breathing. Because, you know, when kids get really excited or upset or scared, they, you know, they do that
right.
almost like they can't take a breath, their breathing gets so shallow. Well, these sniffs actually connect you to a shallow breath that then exhales into a deeper breath. So if a child is super excited or scared, it's a great breath to help them reconnect with their breathing where they are and help them take them back into a deeper breathing where they can calm themselves.
Sounds like we could all use some bunny breath sometimes when we
yeah.
get stressed out.
I mean, these techniques, I mean, if you read any research or the literature, you see breathing is vital to our health. Anyone who does deep conscious breathing and uses various techniques at different times to help shift their mind-body state to a more balanced place, that's yoga.
Right.
Yes.
Well,
and
good.
The reason that yoga has lasted, 5,000 years is because it works.
That's right. And
you do yoga.
And it's universally.
Is it a religious practice for you?
That's right. And it is wonderful. And I have to say, my co-host, Rick, I don't think he does yoga, and I think he could benefit from it. So, all right. Well, Leah, that is all the time that we have, but thank you for clarifying the controversy and keep up the great work that you're doing out there with students around the country.
Great. It's yogaed.com if anyone wants to find out about our, you know, trainings, because mostly we're into training people who then deliver the program
okay.
back to their own community or school.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, so Leah Kalish from Yoga Ed, and check her out at yogaed.com. Thank you, Leah.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
What do you think, Rick? Yoga? Do you feel calm and transcendent?
Yeah.
Did I just say that wrong again? Transcendent.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I felt the other way too, whatever voice you were referring right. to. But no, but actually, no, now this does. You know, Al Gore alone, I was thinking people were making up conspiracy fantasies. But if there's Al Gore and yoga going on in schools, I think it's a kind of movement of some kind or another.
I think this is an attack on our Christian values as a country. I don't know. You know, the Neil McCluskey, I can't say anything today. Neil, the guy at Cato.
Neil McCluskey.
Yes, thank you. Libertarian. So he has a new paper out saying it's exactly these kinds of controversies that argue for us just going to a voucher system because the public schools can't possibly resolve all these differences of opinion.
Over yoga?
Over yoga, over Al Gore, over creationism, over sex ed, on and on and on and on, distributing condoms in the schools, you name it. That there's, you know, our country is too polarized. If you had school choice, everybody could just choose a school whose values they agreed with.
I want to send my kid to a school where we deny global warming. I think that's
many people do, in fact.
That's
and they want you to pay for it with your tax dollars. You have a problem with that?
Which schools?
These schools that deny global warming.
Which schools are these?
The ones you just talked about a minute ago.
There's actually schools where they're denying global warming?
Oh, surely there are. Liam?
No, we got news of the weird.
Okay. All right. That's right. We're done. Okay. It's time for everyone's favorite. Liam can't wait any longer. Education news of the weird. Special correspondent. What's weird this week? I don't know. Take it away.
Well, first we got a couple of updates. The kid who wanted to put in his high school yearbook a picture of himself wearing chainmail and carrying a sword and who sued his school after they wouldn't let him. Well, he won his case. The picture will now appear in the yearbook. Woo-hoo. Fie upon thee, district school board. In a related story, the butt artist who operates www.buttprintart.com and was recently fired from his job as a high school art teacher has hired ACLU lawyers. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Nice.
And news of the weird. The principal of St. Rose of Lima School, a Catholic elementary school in Rhode Island, has decreed that all students must remain silent during lunch. There have been three recent choking incidents at the school. That is, students choking on food, not students choking each other. The latter violates several Catholic principles. And the staff cannot hear such choking in a loud lunchroom. Thus, the vow of silence. However, Lori Healy, a teacher at the school, said that silent lunch actually means students can whisper, but that could just be her interpretation of the law. Rick, has anyone ever choked in the AEI cafeteria?
I don't believe so. Now, I don't understand this. I don't understand how you can have three kids choking at one school. I mean, I went to a big high school. We used to go a long stretch and not have a single kid choke all year.
Well, I have a theory about this. In the newspaper article about this story, a student said that, you know, they had figured this out, that if they don't talk, they can eat even faster and go out to recess quicker. And so I'm starting to think that maybe they have this culture of eating too fast in this school and that what we need is to slow down and to chew our food.
They should only serve them like mushy food.
That's another solution. Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, solution that they don't actually want to stop the choking from happening. They just want to be able to hear it when it happens. Is that really the best? I mean, Liam, is that how you would handle this situation?
No, that is not. I put everything in a food processor and ladle it out, like Rick said.
Now, right. How would McCluskey handle this?
Well, you know, he would say that we shouldn't make a decision about how to handle it. Every school should be allowed to handle it separately. So, yes. He just wants to make sure you have a voucher so that you can go to a Catholic school like this that makes you eat a silent lunch.
And he would handle butt art and the school sword the same way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
It's a powerful idea.
Yeah. Libertarianism.
We wouldn't have any news of the weird.
It's true. That is true. That is. You know? I mean, schools – what are schools these days if not a great venue for culture wars?
And football.
Okay. That is it. We all need to go get some rest here at Team Podcast. Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, Rick's still kind of depressed about his birthday. Jen's feeling under the weather. I can't say a word to save my life. And now, Liam, you're on your game. You're right. Never mind. Yeah. You're holding us all up. The rest of you out there, I hope you have a good and healthy week. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Signing off.